Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome to Idle Red Hands, I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. You know you spread your arms out.
I know that. When you said the listeners don't until you just told them.
Yeah. Chris isn't joining us today because he has some big news, the birth of his new daughter.
Yep. Congratulations to both him and his wife.
Yeah, congratulations, Chris and Sari. Well, before we get into the episode, the big gaming news is D&D Next.
Yeah.
So we've both signed up for the playtest.
Yep, we got it too, finally.
Yeah.
Took a little bit of effort.
Yeah, I guess the servers were swamped. Yeah.
I imagine a lot of people signed up, so.
So what we're going to do, we're actually not going to do an episode on D&D Next.
And that's all the listeners just disappearing. Thanks.
Hello. What we're going to do is we'll have a kind of a diary every episode for
Dear
a while.
Journal. Today I play D&D Next.
Yeah. Does the dwarf fighter like me? But what we'll do is we'll give our like kind of first impressions. There is a playtest planned. Hmm. And we'll also be giving updates on the playtest. Just because it's an ongoing thing and they've already had a Q&A session. I think they're going to be posting up some FAQs. And just giving our thoughts on that. So instead of doing a periodic D&D Next episode, we'll have like our little D&D Next diary.
Dear D&D Next. Yeah. We got to start it that way now.
What were you thinking? But we're not going to start it for this episode because Chris is not here and he's very much interested in participating in this.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, because Chris isn't here, we actually got another highlight.
For us, at least.
Not being here is that we get to do an episode that we've wanted to do for a long time, but we couldn't do with Chris because he refused to watch this TV series, and that's Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, despite us badgering him repeatedly.
No.
If you listen to old episodes, we kind of make fun of you for, it seems like every actor you bring up is followed by, and you know where I first saw him? Friday Night Lights. So it's just really funny. Not having watched the show, it's like, yeah, Friday Night Lights again. And then finally watching, and I'm like, oh my god, this show is awesome! Why did I not watch this before? So now I'm trying to like push Chris. Yeah, watch it. Just watch it.
But, yeah. But apparently he doesn't have time.
Yeah.
So what we'd like to do here, Friday Night Lights, is maybe get a little bit of praising the show, of course. Mm. But we'd also like to connect it to gaming. We're going to try to stick to our normal spoiler policy of not ruining anything. But if you really want to watch Friday Night Lights, hey, by all means, stop listening to this episode. Go watch the first three seasons,
yeah,
which is what we're going to cover in this episode. Then come back and see how we tie it to gaming.
Yeah, yeah. Do yourself a favor. If you haven't watched it, go watch those three seasons.
But again, we'll try not to ruin storylines and that. We'll focus mostly on the characters, mm-hmm, and certain elements of Friday Night Lights that are consistent throughout the series and how we think that can enrich a game.
Yeah.
So before we get into it, we'll just explain a little bit what the show's about because it'll give you some context in case you don't want to watch it, but you just want to listen to some gaming ideas. And it's about a high school football team in Texas. There you go.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Games happen on Friday. There's lights on the field.
Friday night lights. Thank you. I was like, I'm missing something. The Friday night lights.
Yeah. It's late all out there.
Or really sticking to that no spoiler policy. To kick it off, and then this is like a recurring theme throughout the series, it's their motto. And it's clear eyes, full hearts.
Can't lose.
So the coach will say,
usually it sounds a lot more dramatic when everyone says it together.
Yeah.
As opposed to one person.
Imagine Wayne as about, I don't know, 30 teenage boys.
Can't lose. I am not a football player by any means.
And, you know, it's like the coach will say it and the team will respond with the can't lose. Or, you know, a player might say it and they'll respond. And it seems like such a simple thing. And we touched on this in the Saturday morning cartoon episode of kind of a catchphrase or a motto or something, you know, like the Yojo.
Yeah.
By the power of Grayskull, He-Man.
Hmm. Yeah.
But here, I mean, this is much deeper, of course. It's much, you know, Friday Night Lights is deeper than a Saturday morning cartoon.
Well, I think it works on a lot of levels.
Yeah.
Like, just saying that the Saturday morning cartoon thing, it is kind of a power-up.
Yeah.
But not in the He-Man sense where anybody transforms, obviously.
Right.
But it is kind of, you know, they chant it in the huddle before they break to make a play. And it's kind of like the, yeah, let's get pumped and sort of do this catchphrase a little bit.
But like you said, it's also the theme for the whole show.
Mm.
Or it could be the theme for your whole game is that if their eyes are clear and their hearts are full, they will not be able to lose.
Yeah.
So if you lose, you know, your eyes were a bit cloudy or, you know, you had doubts in your heart. And I think that not only ties the show together, but it ties that team together. Mm. And I think that can help tie your game together if there's some sort of motto. And we see this done really well. We were talking about this before the episode in A Song of Ice and Fire.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where all the different houses have their own motto, the most famous being Winter is Coming.
Right.
For Stark.
But I think that's a really good example.
Yeah.
Because, like, you look at House Stark, everybody knows those words, Winter is Coming, and that forms, like, their whole
philosophy.
Yeah, their whole outlook. Every character has that outlook. They just kind of show it in different ways.
Yeah.
But they know that, yeah, things may be great now, but they're not going to last, and so you have to prepare for it, because, like the motto says, winter is coming.
Yeah. So, yeah, it provides that cohesion. So all your northern characters can be different and unique, but they're all northern characters because winter is coming, and they all understand that. Just like House Martell and people from Dorne.
What is it? Unbent, unbowed, unbroken?
Unbroken, yeah.
Yeah.
And then when you watch that series, and it's like, if you forget that's House Martell's motto, you forget at your own peril, because that's the way they think. Now, what we don't find in a Song of Ice and Fire is them. Winter is coming, they say a lot.
Yeah.
But like, for example, House Lannister, they actually say Lannister always pays his debts.
Right.
More so than their actual
house. The point
house
where people actually think that's their motto.
Right.
And it isn't.
In Friday Night Lights, that's the team's motto. And they say it, and there's like some really nice dramatic scenes where that comes up, and you see there's a turning point because they're saying the motto. It's like they're remembering who they are. And I think that's really good if you can form your group, your party, or your play group, or maybe wherever they came from. They have some sort of motto, and that helps define who they are. So if you have two people from the same area, they have that same motto. They have that little connection. We've seen Fantasy Flight Games' Warhammer RPG.
Okay,
they try
yeah.
to do where they give like those little party cards in addition to your individual character card. And they're trying to say, here's your cohesion, and, you know, this is what you guys commonly think, your common motivation.
Hmm.
And you could do that. That's a very clever mechanic. Or you could just look at kind of A Song of Ice and Fire, or especially Friday Night Lights, and think, what is your motto? You know?
Yeah, if you were playing a game of Fate, because we kind of tried it, and we did it where everybody kind of created an aspect for, I think, the person to the left. But I could see in a game of Fate kind of, okay, let's come up with a team aspect. Even if we're not a team, like, you don't have to be like a superhero team or a sports team, but like, we're a group, we're going to stick together, let's kind of pick a team motto, essentially. Something that'll kind of connect us.
Yeah. And then there's also a motto between some particular characters where it's Texas Forever.
Mm.
So you can even have something, they're part of the team, but then two particular players have a special connection. Now, I think we're being a little bashful, you know, maybe a little shy on the episode. But yeah, definitely, if you watch it and see how they say it, then you're going to get a good idea. And it is almost like, you know, Thundercats Roar.
Yeah.
Was that
yeah.
their motto? Thundercats Roar?
No, Lionel just had the Thundercats, Thunder Ho, whatever. And
Thundercats Ho.
Yeah. But that was only for him.
Oh.
But because he was the team leader, I guess it could kind of be the rallying cry for everyone in a sense. But I think that was distinctly his, as opposed to Clear Eyes, Full Hearts, Can't Lose, which is the team's, not any one person's.
I think I lost some Thundercats cred there.
But look at it this way. You're building up Friday Night Lights cred.
So moving on. So we've got the team. And I think it's a real challenge to unify a party. Now, we've already given, like, borrowed one thing from Friday Night Lights, and that's the motto. And that's going to unify you guys, is this whatever motto that you people have. And the next idea is that the team is bigger than the individual. Or the group, the party, whatever you want to call it, is bigger than the individual.
Yeah, it's kind of bigger than the sum of its parts. Oh, I could never have seen playing like a sports-based RPG before watching this. But after, you know, watching Friday Night Lights, I'm like, having them all be on a sports team is a really good idea, because that's a really concrete reason for them to work together. And I don't, I'm kind of drawing a blank on how you would make other kind of teams, I guess, be bigger than some of, but I guess if you watch some, like, not to go off track, but if you watch some, like, detective shows, like maybe like CSI or NCIS, there's maybe a little bit of that in those shows as well.
I think a good example might be the Marines.
Okay.
Or the US Marines, where, you know, they have Semper Fi.
Yeah.
They got their motto. And a lot of military units, of course, have a motto. But they also, like, recognize the Marines has a history.
Hmm.
It was here before us, and it'll be here after us. And we watch Friday Night Lights. That's very much a part of the show, is they've joined this football team called the Dillon Panthers.
Right.
And this football team had success before.
Mm.
Hopefully it'll have success while you're here. And of course, hopefully it'll have success in the future. You got to respect the past. You got to contribute to the present and the future.
Right. You got
to
build the future.
Yeah. And sometimes when you have like just a party of adventurers, they have no history. And in a sense, they have no present or future because they have the no history.
Right.
And sometimes you play like police officers or you play a military unit or just play Pinkertons in a Wild West. Mm. You got to remember, it's like you're part of something that's bigger than you.
So out of curiosity, and again, this may be off track, but do you think that would be more kind of like the player's responsibility to build kind of, I guess, like a guild or a team or something that has a history and will kind of survive them? Or do you think it's a bit more on the GM's shoulders to kind of say, here is this thing you can belong to and it has a history and will exist after you're gone?
That's a good question. I would think that the game master has to contribute part of the history.
Hmm.
And a large portion of the history, because if the players build the history themselves, that could be a real collaborative process, but I think they wouldn't necessarily feel the past because they created it. Where if the past is kind of given to you, because you have no influence on the past.
Right. Not to keep using Song of Ice and Fire, but I just thought about the Kingsguard too. And they have that huge book, you know, that has the history of every single Kingsguard who's been in
good,
it, you know. And the book was almost kind of like a metaphor, especially when people are reading it.
Yeah.
Because, okay, the beginning of the book has all these people in it. And, you know, you go back to the beginning and it's pretty old, but then the back of the book is blank.
That's
what they fill in. And you can look at those blank pages and you say, there are going to be people on these pages after I'm gone.
Yeah.
So I better make sure that someone on those future pages doesn't look back at my page and, you know, or just people will be reading this and they're going to be looking at me. So
they'll be judging you, but also you have to ensure that organization's survival.
Mm.
And sometimes you can lose sight if you're just playing a game and you've just got these specific session objectives. But always thinking, no, I got more than that. And also I think that's also a really good example in that one of the best stories in A Song of Ice and Fire is kind of not really a spoiler, but the last stand of some past Kingsguard.
No, yeah.
And again, maybe this gets into the game master creating it, but the game master creates these stories and gives them to the players.
Mm.
And they think, you know, I really want to add to that story of this organization. It's like, that's really badass, this last stand thing.
Yeah.
So I want to create my own last stand. Or, I mean, if it's a magical guild in the 19th century or something like that, they did something very, very clever. Or they invented something. So we want to add to the
success,
to the knowledge and the success as well.
Yeah.
Also, just using your book ideas, just like you can have a library and there's empty shelves.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
And past mages or occultists or arcanists, they've added to these shelves. And it's our job to add to it as well.
Or I could almost see the players planting a seed, kind of saying, okay, we need something to tie us together. We'll create this group. And then kind of handing it over to the GM, who then writes a history for it. And then you'd hand it back to the players and say, here's the history. You can change a little bit of the present if you see something, you know, cool that you want to sort of build your character around. But I almost think it's kind of important to have that visual, not cue, but that visual reminder. For example, the book, the Kingsguard book, right?
Yeah.
Or like you said, the shelves, that some of them are empty, and you'll be filling this in. Because like in Friday Night Lights, it's...
The banners, the trophy case.
Yeah, exactly. The banners, the trophy cases.
Uniform.
Past students or past players who come back with those champion rings.
Yeah.
And say, we're looking at you guys to do the same thing.
Yeah. The Montreal Canadiens, the ice hockey team, in their dressing room, they have some of the Hall of Fame players. And there's something painted on the wall, and I don't know it exactly, but it's like, from our hands, we throw the torch.
Hmm.
Something like that. And, you know, that'd be pretty inspiring.
Yeah.
You know, the Spartans had something. They had a song. You know the movie We Were Soldiers Once?
Right.
And Young? That actually comes from, like, a Spartan thing.
Hmm.
And the older soldiers would kind of sing or chant it to the younger soldiers, like, we were heroes once, and young, and... Da, 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 and kind of talk about what their past glories. And then the current soldiers would be, you know, well, we are soldiers now. Or we are heroes. I think they use we were heroes once and young. So.
Yeah.
And just like kind of that idea. But, you know, you could even use, like, just, I know we're kind of jumping from Friday Night Lights, but you could actually use a sports team as that thing that binds you all together.
Hmm.
Do you have the scientist? Do you have the police officer? You have the criminal. all these things, but what brings these guys together, or these women together, is they were all on the same sports team.
Yeah.
Or they were in the same sorority or fraternity. Something where there was one point in time, something was bigger than them.
Yeah, yeah.
Then they've gone their separate ways, but they always have that ring. They always have that memory. It's like, just think, we always contribute to whatever.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say the ring, too.
Yeah.
Because fraternities, they have a ring, too. So.
You have a ring?
I didn't get one. But, I mean, they do exist.
But they told you about it?
No. No,
you
like,
didn't get
it
one?
Was like, it was kind of like one of those, like, class ring things where you had the option to purchase one.
Oh, yeah.
And it just kind of like, eh.
A bit expensive.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, some of them look really nice. And, I mean, getting back to rings and characters, like, throughout Friday Night Lights, several people have rings, and you can see them, you know, playing with them at certain times, and because that's their reminder.
Yeah.
I like that physical reminder. Mm. So.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing I was thinking before doing this is, well, obviously the game is about football, and...
And the show is about football.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. All right.
The show is about the game.
The show is about the game, and the game is football. How's that?
There you go.
So, but...
You never played football.
Oh, please, like you played football either.
Huge.
You... The one person who could have played football is not currently here.
He did play football.
Oh, well, there, all right, there you go. So he did.
I think he played the flesh wall.
Is that even a position?
I don't know. I asked him what position he played, and he said...
Oh, defense. Did he even say that?
It wasn't even that, like, technical.
What? Anyway, the point I was going to make...
Love you, Chris.
Oh, yeah. The point I was going to make is, in the show, sometimes you don't even see the football game. Like, sometimes an episode will start after they've either lost or won a game, or the end of the episode, or the episode will build up to the game, but it happens off camera. And I was thinking, I really like that as a sense, or not a sense, as a source of kind of external tension building. Like, yeah, sometimes on the episode, you do see the game, and it's exciting, and, you know, you're sitting there, either crying when they lose, and as a man, I'm not afraid to admit that I cried when they lose.
I cried at the end of season one. Yeah.
And
I'm not saying that they lost. You know, I'm just saying that they happened to show a game at the end of season one. And I cried, and I was like, they better win.
And like other
invested a season, and I want to see these guys win state.
Yeah, other times you're sitting there in your chair like, yeah, come on, go. And yeah, the game is integral to the story, but it's not always on camera.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be, and sometimes I really like the episodes that are the aftermath of the game.
Yeah.
And it's people dealing with kind of what happened, because either they lost and people blame each other, or because, well, I guess there's not really that big a consequence when they win, or they win and people feel left out.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I really like how it's almost, it's not exactly a force of nature, but it kind of is in a sense, in my opinion. Like, you don't even really have to see it on camera for it to affect the characters in that story.
Yeah, there's a couple of things you can take away from that. One is like the timing of your sessions.
Hmm.
Like you can spend the whole session building to it and then ending it before the big event happens. We'll call it the event. Oh, you know, I studied accounting.
Right.
And
something in that is called the big event?
No, they call it the critical event.
Okay.
So, you know, if I make an accounting movie, I'm going to call it the critical event. And boy, will people be disappointed when they watch it. Well, sorry, Alien Zone Attack, that's not the critical event? No, a transaction happens. That's it.
Really? Transaction that's between it? Aliens? No, between money.
Look at him write down that critical event. He just got like $1,000. That's right. That was it? Yeah.
It'd be a very short movie.
Or a very long movie. Anyway, sorry. But yeah, you could end just before the event. And maybe next session, start up with the event, because sometimes an episode will start with the game in progress.
Yeah.
And you could start that. So it's a little bit different. Usually you have a build up and then you have a climax, but then you could start with like a cold start. You've already built up to this. That's one thing you could do.
Yeah. And I really like that. I think that helped me sort of clarify my idea. I could see starting a set or doing a session, where you build up to it and then you don't actually play it or the event. Or you could start with the event kind of at the beginning of the event, and then you play it. Or you could do the tail end of the event. Because a lot of times when, at least in the show, when they start the episode with a game, it's kind of not at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's not even at the middle. It's usually...
The Dillon Panthers are down a touchdown.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes they only have like 10 seconds left, right? And you're like, it's almost kind of like a cold start, because
Yeah.
It's exciting right from the beginning.
Because, like, sports, I mean, they have a scoreboard and they keep track. Oh, another counting anecdote. That's what accountants do. They just keep score. That's what counting is. This textbook is really trying to, like, hype accounting.
Oh, really? And so you had to make it interesting?
They're the scorekeepers of life.
Did you imagine all the little numbers playing football? Yeah, go, go.
Sorry. But yeah, sure, if you have a game and you, like, literally a sports game, then that could be, you know, you have the score. But you could also, you know, have, you know, a more metaphorical game, like a battle. Mm. And you actually determine that some people are down. Some people are wounded. And, you know, you might just start it and say, everybody take half your hit points off. Yeah. Or everybody mark some wounds. Or guess what? You know those NPC? They're gone.
Yeah.
And they're now lying on the ground. And that might be kind of exciting because, well, what happened to them? But it doesn't, I don't have time. We've got to end this. We've got to finish this.
Yeah. The thing I would say is, I've tried to do like a cold start before, or I've thought about kind of starting in the middle of a battle. I think you as a GM would have to make it incredibly clear by the situation you've set up that there is no time for the players to ask questions about what happened.
Hmm.
Whatever situation you're setting up, it has to be dramatic and important and intense enough that you just say, okay, let's go. Let's start the session. And it kind of immediately everybody, maybe one question to begin with, then you just kind of go, okay, and we have to do it.
I mean, yeah, like, for Friday Night Lights, you're used to it.
Hmm.
I mean, right away, like, even in the first episode, it, like, cuts away. And you're like, well, I'm not going to see the game, you know? But so you're kind of used to it when you watch Friday Night. This happens. Sometimes you'll see the game, sometimes you won't. And also then, when you do cut into, like, the last minute or last 10 seconds of a football game, you're kind of like, this is a football game. These are the things that happen. Hmm. I mean, the same with the combat. You're like, deal with it. It happens. Or you're on the run or something like that.
Yeah.
You're familiar. Your spaceship just came out of a warp drive and two things come out of it. I'm like, oh, great. But if you add in a lot of mystery and unknown elements, then yeah, you're going to just encourage questions. But if it's like you're playing Star Wars and TIE fighters are chasing you, it's like everybody's like, okay, TIE fighters are chasing us because, you know, something.
Well, why are they chasing us? That's what they do.
Sorry, we're a rebellion, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can just skip it entirely. Hmm. People have complained, you know, it's like, oh, the combat's too long. It was like 3 hours of combat. I really enjoyed the
role-playing. Here comes the battle mat.
Yeah. Here comes the battle. Bust out the battle mat. And sometimes it might be a refreshing change. It's like you spend the whole time preparing for whatever this event is going to be and make a determination as a game master of, is it successful or unsuccessful and to what degree? Of course, if it's unsuccessful, you do have to be prepared for the players to call foul.
Well,
because the dice is kind of your, you know, the final say on those things. But they might get into it as like, well, we've done all the planning and then you tell us the aftermath and we can focus just on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As opposed to just, you know, you have a big giant rock monster and you spend, you know, hours and hours just literally chipping away at this creature until it falls and you're like, all right, well, that was 2 hours out of my life.
I was going to say again, I think if the GM decides that the players failed, it can't really be a punishing failure, right? Like you can't absolutely crush them. They can't all be dead. So, come back to the session. Yeah, you guys are all dead. What? You know. But it's fine to make them lose. I just think it can't be really, really harsh because then that kind of isn't fair.
Right.
So, make it so they lost, but not an overwhelming defeat, or things still have to be salvageable because pretty much otherwise you don't really have a story.
Yeah. We always talk about, you know, something's bigger than, so much bigger than them. Mm. Like you talk about a battle and they're only a small part. You could just say, yeah, you're all prepared for the battle. Battle's done. Your side lost.
You did great. Your troop did great. Still lost.
By great, I mean you ran away.
you're alive, aren't you?
Yeah. By great, I mean you buried yourself under a bunch of dead bodies. Okay, now we're going to move on to the characters. And I think this is probably the main reason we want to talk about Friday Night Lights. It's just that the characters were very three-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of like little stories. And we've talked about this before. It's like sometimes you have like the little crisis.
Yeah, like watching Friday Night Lights really made me think of that discussion we had where the story doesn't have to be the giant epic, let's save the world or let's rescue the universe for it to be dramatic. You know, because you watch that show, and I'll be honest, there are times I actually have to pause the DVD because I can't take the tension because you're just like, oh, I can't believe that just happened.
I'm glad I have the DVDs because then I can
you can pause
watch
it.
Or watch four in a row because you're like, there's no way I'm going to walk away from this.
Yeah, so, I got to know what happens.
You know.
There are other times you're like, oh, I can't stand anymore. I got to get them. I got to walk away. Oh, all right. But yeah, watching this, I don't know. It really, to me, shows that things don't have to be big or supernatural or out of the ordinary to be compelling and dramatic.
Yeah.
Because everything that's happening in the story, at least to me, is believable.
Right. And can I just do the flip side there? Or if it is big or supernatural or whatever, over the top, it doesn't mean that the characters have to be one-dimensional.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
We're going to talk about these characters, and even though I've just talked about them being three-dimensional, we're going to give them one dimension, one catchphrase, but basically things that you can pull out of each individual character. Again, we're only going to focus on the first three seasons.
First three episodes. They're pretty much small.
Yes. After season three, they change over, so there's a lot of fresh faces come in, and some of the old faces go away. The first character is Jason Street, played by Scott Porter, and he is the star quarterback at the beginning.
Yeah, when I first started watching, I thought it was kind of, you know, my knee-jerk reaction was, the star quarterback, the popular kid, nothing really interesting is going to happen with him.
Yeah. And also, he is also very nice, very humble. He is perfection.
Yeah.
So what do they do in Friday Night Lights? They break him.
Spoiler.
Yeah. Well, it happens in the first episode.
I know.
That was the one safe thing I could
spoil. All right.
And it happens kind of. All right, anyway. Sorry.
Don't you mean premise?
Yeah, it was kind of.
More. I guess it's premise. But yeah, at the beginning, like watching it, everybody in that show pretty much knows he is going to take the Dillon Panthers to state.
Yeah.
There's almost no question that, what's the word I'm looking for? It's inconceivable that
it's a given.
Yeah, it's a given that they are going to win. And then all of a sudden, they break him. And you're like, what's going to happen now?
Yeah, and you almost think that, well, that's the end of that character.
Yeah.
I guess we'll never see him again.
I kind of expected that. Yeah. I expected, okay, Scott Porter's only going to be here for one, maybe two episodes. He's gone so that the spotlight can be put on someone else.
Yeah.
But no, he's still a character in the show and he's a really good one.
Yeah. That's, you know, sometimes when people say, like, I'll be Chris for now for a moment because he always complains about Superman and how Superman's boring.
Hmm.
And how do you make Superman interesting is you can break Superman. But Superman has a lot more. Whatever you break on Superman, he still has other things. And it's the same with the Jason Street, is everybody kind of focused on, well, he's a star quarterback.
Right.
But he also has some very good human qualities. And those can shine through. So you almost have, if you imagine if you're playing like something like a point by system, like World of Darkness or GURPS, and just let one particular character have like twice as many points as everybody else. And then you kind of take half of them away.
Mm-hmm.
In essence, in that you do something that basically debilitates half of their points.
Right.
So they're still very good, but they're half of what they were. And how do you deal with that?
Mm.
That would be a good thing, a good starting point.
It's
not necessarily springing on a player, like they show up with their great character and then go, yeah, guess what? Here you go.
I can see somebody imagine the GM ripping the sheet in half and like, there you go. I'm half a man. Exactly.
Or woman.
Poor woman. Yeah. All right. I'm half a person.
Half a person, yeah.
But no, I think I might actually prefer that where the GM tells you, okay, great. You, before the game starts, right, before we start the campaign, you were great. You were perfect. You had everything.
Yeah.
And now you don't.
Yeah. To further that point is like, not only that you were great and that's part of your backstory, everybody knows you were great.
Yeah.
You were, and now everybody knows that you're broken.
Not only were you great, you were everyone else's greatness. You were the one who was going to sort of, I had it for a second, but I lost it.
Bring it. You were going to achieve their dreams for them.
Yeah. You were essentially carrying everybody else's dreams with you.
Yeah. And now things have changed.
Mm.
And maybe it shifted to somebody else. So are you now in a supporting role to help those dreams to still happen?
Right.
And we're not talking about, Jason Street is not an anti-hero.
Mm.
He is someone who just has to deal with the circumstances and can he rise above the challenge.
Yeah.
And it's there to show that, you know, you can be, there's many ways to be a hero.
Well, it kind of shows you're not one thing.
No.
Right? Because he had that one thing. He had football. And then when it gets taken away, your question is, okay, what are you?
Yeah.
I have to be something else.
Yeah. You imagine like a game like Mage and you're like, yeah, you can't do magic anymore.
Hmm.
Well, what else can you do? But you're still in the Mage world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I have a really interesting character. He's like, I could see that, whoa, are we switching to the regular World of Darkness book? No. Why are you still looking in the Mage book? Oh, we're still playing Mage, but I can't do magic. Exactly.
And who was Jason Street's replacement, in essence? And arguably the person who the first three seasons are about is Matt Saracen, the backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Played by Zach Guilford.
Yeah, like you said, we're going to kind of despite the characters being so three-dimensional, we're going to compress them to one dimension. And we decided that he's kind of the, the reluctant hero?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, that's what the backup quarterback does. He has to take the spot, and Matt has to sort of finish the season in these giant Jason Street shoes.
Right.
And that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. And just like that character gets a lot of pressure just in life and constantly dealing with it. And like his real passion isn't football.
Yeah.
It's art. But he's in Texas and he's got some ability to play football. So then he rises to that challenge. He's lives with his grandma because he doesn't have his parents and has to care for her. And he's in high school. So constantly rising to that challenge. We're kind of contrasting like a Matt Saracen with like Batman.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where Batman is like, his parents die and he obsesses about it for the rest of his life. Whereas a Matt Saracen would be like, dude, you know, my parents are gone too, you know.
I believe the line was, get over it, dude. Yeah. Your parents are dead. Get over it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Batman's kind of obsessed and it's like, he's not even efficiently fighting crime. You know, one man in a costume when you could just spend your billions of dollars to just...
Fund the police force,
vigilante force, or just like more homeless shelters. Mm. Whereas, like, Matt Saracen gets just as many traumas in his life or setbacks, and he just, like, well, just got to keep pushing on. Can't lose sight of who I am. Whereas, like, Batman is like, who are you? Is this what you are?
Mm.
Some guy who lives in a bat cave?
Oh, yeah, he is.
Well, I guess so. Is that who you want to be?
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Whereas, like, a Matt Saracen is like, well, this is who I want to be. I'll fulfill my obligations, but I never lose sight of what I want to really do.
I think in Matt, there's a lot of, this is what I have to do.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Even though kind of nobody thanks me for doing it. Sometimes nobody helps me doing it.
Yeah.
But I have to do it. So I will.
Yeah. And it's also, he's a very pure hero in that I'm going to do the right thing because it's the right thing.
Right.
And they don't need this, oh, I'm going to do the right thing because my parents died and I'm angry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in essence, he's like, I guess you could say like kind of a Superman. But without all the super abilities.
Yeah.
So you imagine the guy that put on the costume and is like, well, you know, I don't fight crime because, you know, I feel it's the responsibility of my superpowers.
Hmm.
It's just like, it's kind of the right thing to do. And I kind of owe society or I kind of owe whatever.
Yeah.
And I think like, if you want to play like a pure hero, it is not the paladin with all the extra abilities. It's the guy that just picked up the sword because, you know, that was... It just needed to be done, you know.
What might be hard to do in a game or kind of a difficult character to play, but yeah, you're not doing it to be thanked.
Yeah.
You're not doing it for any reward of any kind. Like you said, you're doing it because it has to be done.
Yeah.
And possibly no one else will do it.
Imagine if it was like Battlestar Galactica and you're all like Viper pilots.
Mm.
And this person's not the Viper pilot that always wanted to be a Viper pilot. Isn't this person's not the best pilot there is. They're the person that was like, well, this has happened. And everybody's got to pitch in, and I'm everybody, so I'm going
to
do it.
I don't know, that'd be pretty interesting. It would be hard to do in some systems, but I could see purposefully then building a character that was not optimized for a specific task, like Viper Pilot, right?
Yeah.
If you're playing Battlestar Galactica, just make an average guy.
Yeah.
And then make him a Viper Pilot, but don't dump all your points into piloting.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking back to Vampire, just probably because we really like the game, is you got the Jason Streak, and he's the person that was embraced, and... something went wrong, or what we were talking about before, they became a Nosferatu.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And what do you do now? So there's where the embrace is not a positive.
Right.
It breaks the person somehow. A Matt Saracen character would be, they're embraced, and it becomes almost, they have a responsibility now. Maybe they feel, now I'm responsible where I have to help my new species, in a sense, the vampires. So everything they do is, yeah, maybe they still want to be human, but they don't navel gaze about it. They're like, well, yeah, sure, I'd like to be human, but I'm not. So I'm going to do what I need to do. You know? And it's not glum or anything like that. He's probably one of the funnier characters in the series.
Yeah, it's also not that kind of like false modesty either.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not pretending to be modest to actually get attention.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
And the next character is Tim Riggins, played by Battleship's own, or Canada's own, Taylor Kitsch.
Yeah, it was funny watching Battleship after watching Friday Night Lights because
he played Tim Riggins.
He played Tim Riggins in Battleship. It's like, hey, it's Tim Riggins in the Navy fighting aliens.
I get like kind of defensive because it's like directed by Peter Berg, Battleship. And I had like two Friday Night Lights guys. And you're just like, come on, people, go out and watch this movie.
Yeah.
Support them. And like a John Carter bombed. And I'm like, hey, two massive bombs in 1 year. Come on. Give him another role. We've said that Tim Riggins is the, I guess, the apathetic hero.
Yeah, because again, like starting to watch the series, the first couple scenes, you're like, all right, he's kind of the stereotypical, I guess, slacker bad boy, essentially. You know, but then you kind of figure out, no, he's not. He has all this talent. He has all this ability. He could really, you know, make something of himself. But like you said, he's kind of the apathetic hero where he doesn't really want to.
Yeah, so in his case, he doesn't want to try. And you contrast that with Tyra Collette, played by Adrienne Palicki, is she's afraid to try.
Yeah.
Or afraid to be the most she can be.
Yeah, she's afraid of failure.
Yeah.
They're kind of a similar character. And that, like, on the outside, they both appear kind of to not care or to not do anything. But the motivation comes from different places. Like we said, just Tim's is apathy and Tara's is fear of failure, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess the important thing with both those characters is they change.
Yeah.
Because it would be dead boring watching them, or dead boring watching Tim never actually try anything, you know? Or to Tara just kind of constantly give up. And I think throughout the story, they're kind of given reasons to try, or, you know, people kind of believing in them or kind of supporting them. Or, you know, they're told, no, you can succeed. And then their behavior starts changing, right? Like, Tara starts believing in herself. And Tim kind of has a reason to try.
Yeah, if you imagine the Game Master as, like, the environment, because they are. I mean, there's a real give and take with those characters. Or it waxes and wanes the effort and the involvement. So you could have a character that continuously lapses back into not believing that they can do it. It should be credible, of course. Because you've thrown them some challenges. And, you know, sometimes it can be quite boring. It's like you throw somebody a challenge and then they'll always try to do it. Well, what if a person is like, no, you know, didn't I? You imagine like somebody who, use the Batman example again. It's like, oh, Joker escaped? Well, why do I bother?
Why don't you just put some locks on freaking Arkham Asylum?
Yeah, it's like, well, you know, I kind of did it. You know, now you didn't keep him there. Now he's out. What do you want me to do? You know, I did it.
It's not my job.
Yeah, it's not my job anymore. And that would be like kind of a Tim Riggins is somebody where their effort, you know, goes in and out. And it's in reaction to complications. If you had somebody like a Tyra Collette, it would be, why can't I stop the crime? It's like characters sometimes don't reflect upon if they're kind of in a heroic game where they're like, well, we keep killing all these monsters or we keep fighting these villains, but you know, they keep coming back.
Nothing ever changes.
You know, maybe it's me, you know.
Maybe I'm the one attracting all these monsters.
Yeah, it's like, well, maybe I shouldn't do it. I might antagonize them, you know. And that kind of, like, true internal doubts, that could be quite rewarding to play.
Yeah. Like you said, it's kind of like a give and take with the GM. And this gets back to what we said about, you know, kind of little things being dramatic. I think to play a character like Tim Riggins or Tyra Collette, there would have to be kind of like an understanding between the player and the GM. And the understanding would be, okay, something's going to happen in the story where you are going to try, right? You're going to try and be better. You're going to try and sort of start believing in yourself. And that's going to happen for a little bit. And then I, the GM, am going to throw something at you to kind of break that.
Yeah.
It's not because I'm the antagonist GM, or it's not because I want you to fail. It's because that's what that character is. And the story of that character is finding out whether or not they're going to sort of pull themselves out of that funk and try to keep going.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the adversity to throw at them, you can't tell that story.
Right, yeah. And also, it's just that they swing back and forth. So let's say if you go a system like Vampire with a humanity, somebody might commit at the beginning of the game, I want to keep my humanity. Or I don't care. But somebody like a Tim Riggins or a Tyra Collette, they're not sure which way they want to go. So they might be very, very committed to keeping that humanity and staying as good as they possibly can be. But then they might just like, whatever, why bother? You know, where Matt Saracen is like, I'm a vampire, so I gotta like, you know, support my new peeps. Yeah. Whereas a Tim Riggins would be like, yeah, whatever. I'm a vampire, so why try to be anything else? You know? It's easier to be this way.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it might be, but you know, maybe I'm better than this. And it goes back and forth. And it doesn't mean your character is inconsistent. The inconsistency is your consistency.
Yeah.
And then that can be not only rewarding for you, but also rewarding for the other players, is because which Tim Riggins is showing up to the table.
Ooh, I like that. The drunk one or the sober one?
Yeah. There you go. Boiler, he drinks.
Nah, I do like your humanity example, because that's a quality mechanical quality in a character that you can lose, but then build back up again. As opposed to something like, I don't know, like hit points, right? Yeah. In like a D&D style game, which only continue to go up.
Yeah. Or you could do it something like a game that you really like, Hollowed Earth Expedition, and they have the style points.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of those style points are, like if it's a speech impediment, it'd be kind of odd that swings back and forth. But if it is a certain characteristics such as maybe you're cautious or you're overconfident like that can, you know, you can keep changing it up. Maybe every session or every few sessions is you've got two polar opposites and it swings back and forth. And either the game master assigns it or the player says, well, now, you know, I'm a little afraid now. You know?
Yeah. Again, I think that'd be something that you would have to build with the game master, because the game master, I think, would have to provide you with at least triggers for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it would seem pretty random and arbitrary if you just decide, not today, I'm going to be apathetic. Why? Well, I just want to be. You know, there has to be sort of something in the fiction that kind of flips that switch.
And the final main character that we're going to talk about is Brian Smash Williams, played by Gaius Charles. And this is the brash, seemingly overconfident running back.
Mm-hmm. Is he overconfident? I guess you could say overconfident.
Seemingly. Oh. Yeah. Loud.
Yeah.
Obnoxious. But we say he's the misunderstood hero, where he's put on a persona of Smash. And he has a really good line later in this series where he goes, I'm not Smash anymore, I'm Brian.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which reveals that he's actually a lot more self-aware than you realize. And there's a character, that seems very one-dimensional in the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
But you get to know who he really is as the series progresses. And, I mean, that's really good if you do have that character that he deliberately has that outward persona. And you have maybe the Matt Saracen who does what needs to be done because it needs to be done, but they always still present their true face to everybody.
Well, that kind of is it, at least for Matt Saracen, that kind of is his true face.
Right. Whereas Smash does what he thinks needs to be done, and he presents the character that should do it, that being Smash Williams, not Brian Williams.
Yeah.
And then people have expectations, like they have expectations of Jason Street to take him to state, and they have expectations that Smash Williams as well would take them to state, but in a certain way, with a certain panache.
Yeah. I guess like we kind of talked about like, the team is bigger than the components. In this case, for Smash Williams, his character is essentially bigger than himself.
Yeah.
And he's built that up, and, you know, other people have kind of not fed into that, but like you said, he kind of created that character because everybody needed it.
Yeah.
But like you said, he also kind of realizes that this character is not me.
Yeah.
And this character is bigger than myself. It's almost like a kind of armor a little bit as well. Because of that line he says, it's like, no, I'm not Smash. Yeah, I'm Brian. He almost kind of said, like, that character is essentially dead.
Yeah. You know? There's no use. It was only something, a persona. And that's like, you're playing a character playing a character.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. I'm not talking about Jekyll and Hyde.
Right.
Or even something like a Tim Riggins or a Tyler Collette where they swing back and forth. We're talking about a person who's presenting a false face, but not for any necessarily malicious reasons. Mm. They're not there to backstab anybody.
Yeah.
The deception is very well intentioned.
It's almost like a caricature.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. It's almost, he's almost, you imagine, is like, well, this team is bigger than us, and this team needs this particular role. I will play this role because I'm the most suitable for it, but it's not necessarily me, but that's what I'll play.
It might be, again, kind of strange, but I guess you could almost see him like, kind of like an Achilles little bit in that. For whatever reason, I just thought of it's like, no, I have to, this is kind of what everybody expects me to be, and therefore I'm going to create this sort of perfect persona to carry everyone's kind of expectations, and I'm also going to kind of use that character to kind of protect myself at the same time.
Yeah, well, like Achilles of strike fear, you imagine, or like a marshal who has a reputation for being a lethal shot, and maybe they're not. But they play it up, and they play it up. Mm. It's like, you want to go for that gun against me? You know?
Yeah.
Because they know it actually shields them. You know, the persona can actually help them out in those situations.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy. Yeah, yeah.
No, the Achilles as well is like, you know, maybe somebody could ask them, it's like, wouldn't you want to, I think it's mother, or the mother of the nymph, says the Achilles, you can live a long life or have a short, glorious life, right? And I'm not sure in the myth if she actually asks them which one he would want, and it's just assumed, you will want this.
Right.
Whereas the Smash Williams is almost like, they would assume that he wants a particularly glorious life. But if you actually like caught him in an unguarded moment, he's like, well, no one bothers to ask me what I really want.
Hmm.
people assume that Smash Williams wants this. No one cares what Brian Williams wants.
Yeah.
If you play like a real classic, a superhero, where they do have the secret identity, and they very much play it up, is, I guess Spider-Man does it a little bit. They have a lot of doubts when they don't have it. But when they put it on, they have the false bravado and the quips and everything, like not a care in the world, even though the actual Peter Parker, you know, is almost like crushed under the weight of everyday life.
No, I think probably the superhero analogy is even better for Smash Williams, because it's like, now I'm going to put on Smash, and Smash doesn't worry about anything.
Yeah. And that can be a lot of fun for a player to play the two contrasts. And it takes a while for you to see Smash Williams in those unguarded moments.
Right. Yeah, I guess when you do, you really understand why he's doing it.
Yeah.
And I think that goes for all the characters. Like you said this before we were recording, is kind of like if you scratch away a little bit of the characters, their motivation is always the same.
Yeah.
They're always kind of constant, and their actions have been different, but why they're taking those actions is always consistent.
Yeah.
Which is probably why they feel like real people.
Yeah. And he's a good example. Is like, I mean, there's certain limitations in a TV series. You know, can only cast so many actors. And Friday Night Lights always had a problem with budgets. You know, they're always in danger of being canceled and that. So they're always trying to cut costs.
Why? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a great show. But you watch this person, and Smash Williams can be very unlikable.
Mm.
And a lot of the other main characters don't like him because they don't like Smash Williams. But then you're like, well, but they all got to hang out. And there's, of course, the team, as we talked about,
forces them to work together.
But then you see that they start to genuinely like each other.
Mm.
It actually seems very natural, because what they're doing is seeing Brian Williams, not Smash Williams. So when they're all kind of hanging out, you could say, oh, of course they are, because they're just the actors they hired. Of course, they're going to hang out with each other.
Right.
But then you also see it as, no, they actually see the real people.
I guess it kind of gets a little bit into sort of fiction versus mechanics.
Yeah.
Where, I don't know, I'm kind of the opinion where even if you're doing something in the game for a mechanical reason, it should kind of feel like it's coming from the fiction.
Yeah.
And maybe it was artificial because of exactly what you said. You know, these are the actors the show has, meaning these are the people we're going to see.
Yeah.
But watching the show, I never really felt, oh, these guys again.
Yeah.
You know, you don't really get the sense of they're hanging out because these are the actors they hired.
Yeah, they don't want to cast a friend for Smash Williams.
Right. So, like, watching other shows, and I'm drawing blank, you do get that feeling like we're seeing these people again because this is who the show hired. Like, to use the mechanical example, some shows feel like you're seeing the mechanics behind the show.
Yeah.
Where I think the goal should be in story, this happened for fictional reasons, even if the real reason was mechanical.
Well, that's a good point.
All right. Hopefully, you know, you'll use some of this in your game. And more importantly, hopefully you'll watch Friday Night Lights, because that's an awesome show. So check us out on the forums. Follow us on Twitter. Listen to us on DriveThruRPG. You can leave a comment right there on the website. Subscribe to us on iTunes. We're also on Stitcher. I think I covered all of them.
You can also listen to us on our own website.
Yeah.
Is that the first thing you said?
Yeah, that's usually the first thing he says. Chris is a lot better.
I usually tune him out when he says it, though.
Yeah, me too.
Because I said, record it.
Yeah.
And now that we have to do it, I'm like definitely going to be,
record it. Yeah. You know what? You never notice the little things until they're gone. In this case, Chris doing the outro.
Oh, I miss Chris. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us. And just remember, Texas forever. Bye.
Bye.
Drive-Thru RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-Thru RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.